the Spaniards arrived in Xaloco, near the entrance to Tenochtitlan. That was the end of the march, for they had reached their goal. Moctezuma now arrayed himself in his finery, preparing to go out to meet them. The other great princes also adorned their persons, as did the nobles and their chieftains and knights. They all went out together to meet the strangers. They brought trays heaped with the finest flowers, the flower that resembles a shield, the flower shaped like a heart in the center, the flower with the sweetest aroma, and the fragrant yellow flower, the most precious of all. He presented many gifts to the captain and his commanders, those who had come to make war. He showered gifts upon them and hung flowers around their necks. He gave them necklaces of flowers and bands of flowers to adorn their breasts. He set garlands of flowers upon their heads. Then he hung gold necklaces around their necks and gave them presents of every sort as gifts of welcome. When Moctezuma had given necklaces to each one, Cortes asked him, "Are you the king? Is it true that you are the king, Moctezuma?" And the king said, "Yes, I am Moctezuma." Then he stood up to welcome Cortes. He came forward, bowed his head low, and addressed him. When Moctezuma had finished, La Malinche translated his address into Spanish so that the captain could understand it. Cortes replied in his strange and savage tongue, speaking first to La Malinche. "Tell Moctezuma that we are his friends. There is nothing to fear. We have wanted to see him for a long time, and now we have seen his face and heard his words." Then he said to Moctezuma, "We have come to your house in Mexico as friends. There is nothing to fear." The Spaniards examined everything they saw. They dismounted from their horses and mounted them again, and dismounted again so as not to miss anything of interest. When the Spaniards entered the royal house, they placed Moctezuma under guard and kept him under their vigilance. Then the Spaniards fired one of their cannons, and this caused great confusion in the city. The people scattered in every direction. They fled without rhyme or reason. They ran off as if they were being pursued. It was as if they had eaten the mushrooms that confused the mind, or had seen some dreadful apparition. They were all overcome by terror, as if their hearts had fainted. And when night fell, the panic spread through the city, and their fears would not let them sleep. In the morning, the Spaniards told Moctezuma what they needed in the way of supplies. Tortillas, fried chickens, eggs, pure water, firewood, and charcoal. Moctezuma ordered that it be sent to them. The chiefs who received this order were angry with the king and no longer revered or respected him. But they furnished the Spaniards with all the provisions they needed, food, beverages, and water, and fodder for their horses. When the Spaniards were installed in the palace, they asked Moctezuma about the city's resources and reserves, and about the warriors and shields. They questioned him closely, and then demanded gold. Moctezuma guided them to it. They surrounded him and crowded close with their weapons. He walked in the center while they formed a circle around him. When they arrived at the treasure house called Teocalco, the riches of gold and feathers were brought out to them. Ornaments made of quetzal feathers, richly worked shields, discs of gold, the necklaces of the idols, gold nose plugs, gold greaves and bracelets, and crowns. The Spaniards immediately stripped the feathers from the gold shields and ensigns. They gathered all the gold into a great mound and set fire to everything else, regardless of its value. Then they melted down the gold into ingots. As for the precious green stones, they took only the best of them. The Spaniards searched through the whole treasure house, questioning and quarreling, and seized every object they thought was beautiful. Next, They went to Moctezuma's storehouse in the place called Totocalco, where his personal treasures were kept. The Spaniards grinned like little beasts and patted each other with delight. When they entered the Hall of Treasures, it was as if they had arrived in paradise. They searched everywhere and coveted everything. They were slaves to their own greed. All of Moctezuma's possessions were brought out. Fine bracelets, necklaces with large stones, ankle rings with little gold bells, and all the royal finery, everything that belonged to the king and was reserved to him only. They seized these treasures as if they were their own, as if this plunder were merely a stroke of good luck. And when they had taken all the gold, they heaped up everything else in the middle of the patio. The Mexicans were too frightened to approach. They were crushed by terror and would not risk coming forward. They shied away as if these Spaniards were wild beasts, as if the hour were midnight on the blackest night of the year. Yet they did not abandon the Spaniards to hunger and thirst. They brought them whatever they needed, but shook with fear as they did so. They delivered the supplies to the Spaniards with trembling hands, then turned and hurried away. The Aztecs begged permission of their king to hold the fiesta of Huitzilopochtli. The Spaniards wanted to see this fiesta, to learn how it was celebrated. A delegation of the celebrants came to the palace where Moctezuma was prisoner, and when their spokesman asked his permission, he granted it to them. On the evening before the fiesta of Toshcatl, the celebrants began to model a statue of Huitzilopochtli. They gave it such a human appearance that it seemed the body of a living man. Yet they made the statue with nothing but a paste made of the ground seeds of the chicolote, which they shaped over an armature of sticks. When the statue was finished, they dressed it in rich feathers and they painted crossbars over and under its eyes. Early the next morning, the statue's face was uncovered by those who had been chosen for that ceremony. They gathered in front of the idol in single file and offered it gifts of food, such as round seed cakes or perhaps human flesh. But they did not carry it up to its temple on top of the pyramid. The procession began, and the celebrants led into the temple patio to dance the dance of the serpent. When they were all together in the patio, the songs and the dance began. Those who had fasted for 20 days and those who had fasted for a year were in command of the others. They kept the dances in line with their pine wands. If anyone wished to urinate, he did not stop dancing, but simply opened his clothing at the hips and separated his clusters of heron feathers. The great captain, the bravest warriors, danced at the head of the lines to guide the others. The youths followed at a slight distance. Some of the youths wore their hair gathered into large locks, a sign that they had never taken any captives. Others carried their headdresses on their shoulders. They had taken captives, but only with help. Then came the recruits, who were called the young warriors. They had each captured an enemy or two. The others called to them, "Come, comrades, show us how brave you are. Dance with all your hearts." At this moment in the fiesta, when the dance was loveliest and when song was linked to song, the Spaniards were seized with an urge to kill the celebrants. They all ran forward, armed as if for battle. They closed the entrances and passageways, all the gates of the patio, the eagle gate in the lesser palace, the gate of the cane stalk, and the gate of the serpent of mirrors. They posted guards so that no one could escape, and then rushed into the sacred patio to slaughter the celebrants. They ran in among the dancers, forcing their way to the place where the drums were played. They attacked the man who was drumming and cut off his arms. They attacked all the celebrants, stabbing them, spearing them, striking them with their swords. They attacked some of them from behind, and those fell instantly to the ground. No matter how hard they tried to save themselves, they couldn't escape. Some attempted to force their way out, but the Spaniards murdered them at the gates. Others climbed the walls, but they could not save themselves. Those who ran into the communal houses were safe there for a while. So were those who lay down among the victims and pretended to be dead. But if they stood up again, the Spaniards saw them and killed them. The blood of the warriors flowed like water and gathered into pools. When the news of this massacre was heard outside the sacred patio, three great cries went up. Mexicanos, come running. Bring your spears and shields. The strangers have murdered our warriors. The cry was answered with a roar of grief and anger. The people shouted and wailed and beat their palms against their mouths. The captains assembled at once, as if the hour had been determined in advance. They all carried their spears and shields. Then the battle began. The Aztecs attacked with javelins and arrows, even with the light spears they used for hunting birds. They hurled their javelins with all their strength, and the cloud of missiles spread over the Spaniards like a yellow cloak. The Spaniards immediately took refuge in the palace. They began to shoot at the Mexicans with their iron arrows and to fire their cannons and arquebuses. And they shackled Moctezuma in chains. The Mexicans who had died in the massacre were taken out to the patio one by one, and inquiries were made to discover their names. The fathers and mothers of the dead wept and lamented. The Mexicans were enraged because the attack on the captain had been so treacherous. The warriors had been killed without the slightest warning. Now they refused to go away or put down their arms. The royal palace was placed under siege. The Mexicans kept a close watch to prevent anyone from stealing in with food for the Spaniards. They also stopped delivering supplies. They brought them absolutely nothing and waited for them to die of hunger. A few people attempted to communicate with the Spaniards. They hoped to win their favor by giving them advice and information or by secretly bringing them food. But the guards found them and killed them on the spot. After they had trapped the Spaniards in the palace, the Mexicans kept them under attack for 7 days, and for 23 days they foiled all their attempts to break out. They did everything they could to make the causeways impassable. They also closed off the roads by building walls and roadblocks. They obstructed all the roads and streets to the city. 4 days after the people had been forced from the temple, the Spaniards tossed the bodies of Moctezuma and Itzcoatzin, who had died, on a place near the water called Teoayoc, place of the divine turtle. And when the people saw and recognized who they were, they hurried to take Moctezuma and brought him to a place called Copulco. There they placed him on a wooden pyre and set fire to it. The fire began to crackle and burn with many tongues of flame, and Moctezuma's body lay burning, and it smelt like scorched meat, and it let off a foul stench as it burned. At midnight, the Spaniards and Tlaxcaltecas came out in closed ranks, the Spaniards going first and the Tlaxcaltecas following. The allies kept very close behind, as if they were crowding up against a wall. The sky was overcast, and rain fell all night in the darkness. But it was a gentle rain, more like a drizzle or a heavy dew. The Spaniards carried portable wooden bridges to cross the canals. They set them in place, crossed over, and raised them again. They were able to pass the first three canals without being seen, but when they reached the fourth, their retreat was discovered. The first alarm was raised by a woman who was drawing water at the edge of a canal. She cried, "Mexicanos, come running! They are crossing the canal! Our enemies are escaping!" When they heard this cry, the warriors leapt into the boats and set out in pursuit. The boatmen paddled with all their might. They lashed the water of the lake until it boiled. The boats converged on the Spaniards from both sides of the causeway, and the warriors loosed a storm of arrows at the fleeing army. But the Spaniards also turned to shoot at the Aztecs. They fired their crossbows and their arquebuses. The Spaniards and Tlaxcaltecas suffered many casualties, but many of the Aztec warriors were also killed or wounded. When the Spaniards reached the canal of the Toltecs, they hurled themselves headlong into the water as if they were leaping from a cliff. The canal was soon choked with the bodies of men and horses. They filled the gap in the causeway with their own drowned bodies. Those who followed crossed to the other side by walking on the corpses. When the Spaniards left Tenochtitlan, the Aztecs thought they had departed for good and would never return. Therefore they repaired and decorated the temple of their god, sweeping it clean and throwing out all the dirt and wreckage. While the Spaniards were in Tlaxcala, a great plague broke out here in Tenochtitlan. It began to spread during the 13th month and lasted for 70 days, striking everywhere in the city and killing a vast number of our people. Sores erupted on our faces, our breasts, our bellies. We were covered with agonizing sores from head to foot. The illness was so dreadful that no one could walk or move. The sick were so utterly helpless that they could only lie on their beds like corpses, unable to move their limbs or even their heads. If they did move their bodies, they screamed with pain. A great many died from this plague, and many others died of hunger. They could not get up to search for food, and everyone else was too sick to care for them, so they starved to death in their beds. And now, the Spaniards came back again. The first battle began outside, either at the ash pits or at the place called the Point of the Alders. Our warriors put the enemy to flight, and not a single Aztec was killed. The Spaniards tried a second advance, but our warriors attacked them from their boats, loosing such a storm of arrows that the Spaniards were forced to retreat again. Cortes, however, moved his headquarters just outside the city. Heavy fighting ensued, but the Aztecs could not dislodge him. Finally, the ships, a dozen in all, came and anchored. Cortes went out to inspect the canals that traversed the causeways to discover the best passage for his fleet. He wanted to know which were the nearest, the shortest, the deepest, the straightest, so that none of his ships would run aground or be trapped inside. The Spaniards now decided to attack Tenochtitlan and destroy its people. The cannons were mounted in the ships, the sails were raised, and the fleet moved out onto the lake. The flagship led the way, flying a great linen standard with Cortes' coat of arms. The soldiers beat their drums and blew their trumpets. When the ships approached the Xoquiapan quarter, the common people were terrified at the sight. They gathered their children into the canoes and fled across the lake, moaning with fear and paddling as swiftly as they could. They left all their possessions behind them and abandoned their little farms without looking back. Our enemies seized all our possessions. They gathered up everything they could find and loaded it onto the ships in great bundles. They stole our cloaks and blankets, our battle dress, our tabors and drums, and carried them all away. When the Spaniards reached Xoloco, near the entrance to Tenochtitlan, they found that the Indians had built a wall across the road to block their progress. They destroyed it with four shots from the largest cannon. When the Aztecs discovered that the shots from the arquebuses and cannons always flew in a straight line, they no longer ran in the line of fire. They ran to the right or left in zigzags, not in front of the guns. if they saw that a cannon was about to be fired and they could not escape by running, they threw themselves to the ground and lay until the shot had passed over them. The warriors also took cover among the houses, darting into the spaces between them. The road was suddenly as empty as if it passed through a desert. The brigantines came up and anchored nearby. They had been pursuing our canoes into the open lake, but when they had almost run them down, they suddenly turned and sailed towards the causeway. Now they anchored a short distance from the houses. As soon as their cannons in the bows were loaded again, the soldiers aimed and fired them at the new wall. Then the Spaniards debarked and filled in the canal. Working hurriedly, they threw in the stones from the shattered wall, the roof beams and bricks from the nearest houses, anything they could find, until the surface of the fill was level with the causeway. Then a squad of about 10 horsemen crossed over it. They galloped to and fro, scouting both sides of the road. They raced and wheeled and clattered back and forth. Soon they were joined by another squad that rode up to support them. The Spaniards now joined all their forces into one unit and marched together as far as the Eagle Gate, where they set up the cannons they had brought with them. The Spaniards wasted no time as they loaded and fired their cannons. The smoke belched out in black clouds that darkened the sky as if night were falling. The warriors, hidden behind the columns, broke from cover and fled. Those on the rooftops climbed down and ran after them. When the smoke cleared away, the Spaniards could not see a single Aztec. Then the Spaniards brought forward the largest cannon and set it up on the sacrificial stone. The priests of Huitzilopochtli immediately began to beat their great ritual drums from the top of the pyramid. The deep throbbing of the drums resounded over the city, calling the warriors to defend the shrine of their god. But two of the Spanish soldiers climbed the stairway to the temple platform, cut the priests down with their swords, and pitched them headlong over the brink. The heaviest fighting began when they entered Nanahualco. None of our enemies and none of our own warriors escaped harm. Everyone was wounded, and the toll of the dead was grievous on both sides. The struggle continued all day and all night. The Aztec warriors advanced to the sounds of flutes. They shouted their war cries and beat their shields like drums. They pursued the Spaniards, harried and terrified them, and at last they took 15 of them prisoners. The rest of the Spaniards retreated to their ships and sailed out into the middle of the lake. Their captors quickly plundered them, seizing their weapons, their cotton armor, and everything else, until they stood naked. Then they were sacrificed to the god, while their comrades on the lake watched them being put to death. The Spanish blockade caused great anguish in the city. The people were tormented by hunger and many starved to death. There was no fresh water to drink, only stagnant water and the brine of the lake, and many people died of dysentery. Nothing can compare with the horrors of that siege and the agonies of the starving. We were so weakened by hunger that, little by little, the enemy forced us to retreat. Little by little, they forced us to the wall. It was at this same time that the Spaniards set fire to the temple and burned it to the ground. The flames and smoke leapt high into the air with a terrible roar. The people wept when they saw their temple on fire. They wept and cried out, fearing that afterward it would be plundered. Step by step, the Spaniards gained more ground and captured more horses. They forced us backward along the Amashak road with their spears and shields. Cuauhtémoc consulted with a group of his captains, then called in a great captain named Apochitzin, who was a dyer by trade. They dressed him in the finery of the Quetzal Owl, which had belonged to King Ahuitzotl. Then Cuauhtémoc said to him, "This regalia belonged to my father, the great warrior Ahuitzotl. Terrify our enemies with it, annihilate our enemies with it, let them behold it and tremble." The king ordered four captains to go with Apocritsyn as a rear guard. He placed in the captain's hand the magic object that was the most important part of the regalia. This was an arrow with a long shaft and an obsidian tip. The captain Tlacotzin said, "Mexicanos, the power of Huitzilopochtli resides in this finery. Loose the sacred arrow at our enemies, for it is the serpent of fire, the arrow that pierces the fire. Loose it at the invaders, drive them away from the power of Huitzilopochtli. But shoot it straight and well, for it must not fall to earth. And if it should wound one or two of our foes, then we shall still have a little time left and a chance to conquer them. Now let us see what the gods' will may be." The Quetzal Owl departed with the four captains, and the Quetzal feathers seemed to open out, making him appear even greater and more terrifying. When our enemies saw him approach, they quaked as if they thought a mountain were about to fall on them. They trembled with dread as if they knew the finery could work magic. The Quetzal Owl climbed up onto a rooftop. When our enemies saw him, they came forward and prepared to attack him, but he succeeded in driving them away. Then he came down from the rooftop with his Quetzal feathers and his gold ornaments. Suddenly, the battle ended. Neither side moved against the other. The night was calm and silent, with no incidents of any kind. On the following day, absolutely nothing took place, and neither the Spaniards nor the Indians spoke a word. At nightfall it began to rain, but it was more like a heavy dew than a rain. Suddenly, the omen appeared, blazing like a great bonfire in the sky. It wheeled in enormous spirals like a whirlwind and gave off a shower of sparks and red-hot coals, some great and some little. It also made loud noises, rumbling and hissing like a metal tube placed over a fire. It circled the wall nearest the lakeshore and then hovered for a while. From there it moved out into the middle of the lake, where it suddenly disappeared. No one cried when this omen came into view. The people knew what it meant, and they watched in silence. Nothing whatever occurred on the following day. Our warriors and the Spanish soldiers merely waited in their positions. Cortes kept a constant watch, standing under a many-coloured canopy. His officers stood around him, talking among themselves. The Aztec leaders gathered in Tolmayecan to discuss what they should do. Cuauhtémoc and the other nobles tried to determine how much tribute they would have to pay and how best to surrender to the strangers. Then the nobles put Cuauhtémoc into a war canoe with only three men to accompany him, a captain, a servant, and a boatman. When the people saw their chief departing, they wept and cried out, "Our youngest prince is leaving us. He is going to surrender to the Spaniards." The Spaniards came out to meet him. They took him by the hand, led him up to the rooftop, and brought him into the presence of Cortes. The captain stared at him for a moment, and then patted him on the head. Then he gestured towards a chair, and the two leaders sat down, side by side.